It's KBCW Local News Hour. Time is 8:14. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher is on the line. He's got an update on the pretty light agenda coming up for tomorrow. I guess the major item appears to be the public hearing at 6 p.m. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Carolyn. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning. So there's a report on the economic impact of the Sundance Festival. Let's just kind of get a quick update on that. We are going to talk with Betsy Wallace tomorrow in the local news hour. But are there any changes that the county wants to make with the transportation system during Sundance? Is that something that is on the horizon?
I have not heard of anything about that at this point. You know, we tend to talk to Sundance leading up to the event as it gets a little closer. Most of the logistics surrounding Sundance are handled through the Park City Municipal Offices. But if there are changes to the transportation system proposed by Sundance, we will be involved with that.
Okay. And then let's talk about senior services. The county is tweaking the employee positions a little bit there. What's happening with employees?
Yes. So we've got essentially an administrative assistant position at each of our senior centers, Park City, in the South Summit area in Camas, and then in the Colville Senior Center. Those have been contract positions up until this point. We're having more success lately having part-time positions available for those. In fact, we've had a successful round of interviews for two openings that we've had lately. So we're changing those positions from contract to part-time.
And what are the positions? What are they called?
They're called, I don't remember the specific name, but they're essentially a position that makes sure that funds are collected properly and accounted for properly at our senior center. They keep track of events. They sign up folks for the different activities that are involved, just some of the administrative activities around the senior centers themselves.
Okay, and prior to this, they've been contract positions, but now you're looking at two part-time positions.
That is correct.
Okay, great. And then there's the public hearing, which may involve a decision on the Lincoln Station approval of the rezone. And where is council sitting in this in terms of their concerns? Because
I don't like to get out in front of council as far as their deliberations. They've heard the issue once and have had some discussion. Not a public hearing at this point. It was just an introduction to the project. They set a subcommittee of the council to be meeting with the developer about the terms of the development agreement. There's been a couple of meetings since they last met with the developer. So this will be the first public hearing where the public is given the opportunity to comment on the project, comment on the development agreement in front of the council and the decision that is in front of the council. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow night.
Okay, and so for those who haven't been following the Lincoln Station, it's a 4-acre parcel that is on Bittner Road, and it's currently zoned one unit per 20 acres, and the developer is interested in putting in 78 units for the 4 acres. Is that?
Yeah, that number sounds correct, plus a small amount of commercial office space. The interesting thing about this project is that it's really the first real test of the provisions within our development code, area 2.3 of our development code, where those that want to apply for more than what their base density allows have to provide kind of a countervailing public benefit. Those are my words, not the words out of the development code. But so they have to make an argument in front of the planning commission and in front of the council that what they're offering, whether it be in public recreation amenities, affordable housing, other things that would benefit the area at large, that is a countervailing reason why a different kind of zoning would be allowed in that case. So a lot of people are watching this one from the standpoint of how the council goes about making their decisions in regards to what's being proposed.
So it's the first challenge, so to speak, of that section 2.3.
That's correct. The first test of it, I guess, is probably a better word.
Okay. Not so much a challenge at this point. But so how many, when you do talk about compelling or countervailing benefits for a community, how many affordable units are in the project, are part of the project right now?
So I'd have to get specific into the development agreement to know the specific number, but our development code requires 20% of a project. I believe that the percentage being proposed is 40% or more. It remains to be seen whether that is the threshold that will compel the council to be interested in that project. It is well over the standards within both the standards within the development code and what we've seen in past projects.
Yeah, it sounds like it's double what typically is required. They're offering double the amount.
Yeah, at least double or more.
Okay. Correct. So what is the projected affordable housing need in the county? Is there some number that everyone's operating off of that, like in Park City, go ahead.
There is not a specific goal that the council has set forth. We've done studies around that show different levels based on whether you're talking about just different AMIs in regards to affordable housing, or you start to include some of the more of the middle income workforce that is still challenged by the cost of housing and the cost of land in Summit County. Over the past year, there have been several projects that have gone through the process that equal probably around 900 to 1,000 units of possible affordable housing, and those include Silver Creek Village, they include the Canyons, and other projects that are moving through the process. Discovery is about to break ground with several units. So we're achieving quite a bit, and or at least there's quite a bit entitled on the affordable side. Whether we see that come out of the ground is another question. The council or the planning commission just approved the first, I believe, 98 units within the Silver Creek Village development that are affordable units that will start that process of building the approximate 330 affordable units that will be in that development. So there's things happening even without a specific number, and quite a bit happening without a specific number being in mind.
Well, and one of the things Council Member Doug Clyde had mentioned about this project in particular, the Lincoln Station, is that he doesn't want to see that evolve into a bedroom neighborhood for people who are working in Salt Lake City.
Right.
So
right.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, the way that hasn't happened in the past, it really kind of depends on the financing that's done around the project. We get more limited depending on the type of financing that a developer uses. If they're using federal tax credits or other types of HUD programs, it certainly puts a lot more limit on what we can require of the developer in regards to who can occupy those units. If they're not using those types of programs, it gives us a lot more flexibility. So, for instance, in the area of Whole Foods, when we got the approximate 20 units above the some of the commercial in the Whole Foods development, we were able to put some waterfall provisions on occupancy that essentially gave preference to those that work on site or work within a very tight radius of that development. I think those same discussions have gone on with this development, but I'd like to hear from the developer probably tomorrow to get specific on how those will operate.
So things like a deed restriction, if it were to be put in place in projects like the Silver Creek Village or the Canyons or the Discovery projects, they would be established by the developers, not by the county itself?
No, the provisions of the deed restriction would be governed by the development agreement. So those things will be written into the development agreement if they're agreed to.
Okay. And do we have projects right now that have deed restrictions in place that would prevent, you know, people coming up and purchasing a unit and then commuting to Salt Lake or wherever outside of the community?
I just talked about the one that the deed restrictions on the Whole Foods development are in place. We have a whole host of different kinds of deed restrictions on affordable housing, depending on when they came into the inventory. And I think one of the things that we're seeing all across the county and probably all across the state is that communities are getting more sophisticated with their deed restrictions in order to deal with issues just like you described as they apply to their specific area. And that discussion about, you know, can we keep the affordable units for folks that work within our county and, you know, help deal with other issues that we have sometimes around transportation, having workforce available for our business community. Those are things that are constantly in the discussion of all the councils, including the county council.
So how, over the years and going forward, how is that managed? Is it something that is just on the title of the property that these are restrictions in place? Or, I mean, every time a person, you know, moves out or moves in, how does that get handled?
It kind of depends on whether it's a for sale unit or an owned unit or a rental unit. So for instance, on the for sale units, we deal quite a bit with Bear Hollow and the turnover of units there as they go up on the market. We've got a couple right now that seem to be moving their way towards a sale. And in that deed restriction, the county has a first right of refusal to purchase those units to keep them in the affordable pool. And we're discussing those right now. The other way in that is that whenever those come up for sale, we have a contract with Mountainlands Community Housing Trust that they are the ones that help us monitor those and make sure that the deed restriction is enforced throughout a sale. And so that's an example. Not all of them work that way. Now, on the rental side, we have a similar relationship with Mountainlands Community Housing Trust that for those types of units that are rental and have a deed restriction on them, the operator of those units is required to report on an annual or semi-annual basis of the usage, occupancy, how they've gone about making sure that people are qualified to be in those units. So, as well, if there's any, going back to some of those federal programs, if there's any tax credit financing related to those that are part of a federal program or a state program, those agencies have reporting requirements to make sure that those deed restrictions are enforced.
Okay, and do you what are you expecting for input tonight? Are you anticipating a big showing of people coming out to give input on the Lincoln Station decision?
I don't really have a good sense of that one at this point. This project doesn't have a lot of close residential neighbors. It certainly has land ownership neighbors. One of them being the Bittner Ranch, it's hard to judge sometimes when you don't have close neighbors monitoring those things. But inevitably, any type of housing development project in the county seems to have good interest. So I would expect there to be some comments.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Tom, for joining us this morning. We'll leave
it
there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye now. Well, you're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. On the line, I have Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis. And better late than never. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, thank you. Sorry, I misread the time, so I apologize.
It happens. Let's talk fast. So there's the tax hearing. There's a Central Utah Water Conservancy District Truth and Taxation hearing. Now, that was held last week. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and can you talk a little bit about what this project is and, what we're talking about in terms of the actual tax impact to people living in Wasatch
yes,
County?
Yes, I can. The Central Utah Water Conservancy District has a practice of keeping their tax rate at the ceiling, and so their ceiling is 0004. Tax rate, and through growth, those tax rates generally will naturally drop, and so they push it back up to the 0004. Now, the reasoning for this is they've got close to 50 years on some of their infrastructure, and they're starting to lose it's had its useful life, and they're having to do some replacement of some of their infrastructure. And currently, there's a large a pipeline called the North Fork Siphon out in the Duchesne County area that brings water from the Duchesne drainage over into Strawberry, which then brings it over into the Utah Lake system. And that pipe is failing, and that's tens of millions of dollars replacement. They also have a couple other projects, and they've been told by the federal regulators they need to increase their reserves for repairs so that as things fail, they'll have money in place to replace them. So that was what they told us and presented to us. They are required to have these hearings in the different areas where they have service, and so they were having that hearing with Wasatch County. That will go to their board, I think it's next month. Those meetings will be held down in the Orem office.
So the Provo Orem area is also impacted by this pipeline?
It is all of the Central Utah Water area, which is Summit, Wasatch, Duchesne, Uinta, Utah County, Salt Lake County, and Juab County.
I see. And Wasatch, because they basically keep it at the ceiling every time there is an opportunity, they'll look at increasing that?
They do. They've done that for a couple of years. And I'm trying to remember the amount they said, but it was, I think it was a $16 increase to the average home in, $6, excuse me. A $6.29 increase for the average home, and the average home in Wasatch County was $440,000.
Okay.
So the average household would see an increase of $6.
Okay, and what kind of feedback did you get, if any?
I think it was, you know, I'm just reading it, but I think it was generally supported by the county council, recognizing that there's a lot of infrastructure in Wasatch County that they've been working on as well, some lining of some canals and doing other things, and that comes out of this money as well. So I guess it somewhat felt that we do get our share out of it for sure, out of the system. It does operate as a system, so even though a piece of equipment may be in another county, because it's a system-wide thing, it affects everybody to a degree. So I think they didn't have any negative feedback from the county from the Wasatch County Council.
Okay, and then Paul Inkenbrandt from the Utah Geologic Survey, he gave an update on the Walsberg Water Study, and maybe you could give us an idea of what this is all about.
You bet. And I don't know if you recall, but it's been a couple years that this has been coming along, and there's a developer in the Walsberg area that has proposed a substantially large development. And one of the things the county council wanted to do before they entertained whether or not they would do that development was to look at the groundwater and water system in the Walsberg area. And to do that, they've hired some consultants and this geological engineer. And he came and gave us a preliminary report. And essentially, my interpretation of what he said, and we don't have the final copy of the report yet, but what he said is if we do increase any groundwater usage, more wells or something like that, we likely will decrease the surface water capacities in the streams and so forth. So it's kind of at a balance to a degree. If we take from one, it'll take from the other. And so that was the report. The council did not weigh in on the report, saying, well, that's good or bad or whatever. And my understanding is they'll wait for the final report, and then there'll be additional hearings and consideration on that.
Okay, and let's talk about the Highway 40 corridor management plan that was discussed. The Heber Valley Chamber director had told KPCW several weeks ago that the area running through Heber City is at a breaking point in terms of the number of vehicles that, you know, there are over 30,000 a day that travel through there, 600 trucks a day. Is this Highway 40 management plan part of that discussion in terms of addressing the issues that are going on right now with Heber and the projection of a bypass road and that kind of thing?
You know, it is all, to a degree, interconnected. It actually is a separate component. It's from just north of Heber City, up to the intersection with Highway 32 and River Road, which goes to Midway, which is the light as you come down from the Jordandale Dam. And that corridor, which on the east side of the road, we call that the North Village. And there's been some pretty significant development plans over the years for that area. There's some entitlements for density and so forth. Not a lot has been built yet. And one of the things that has to be addressed is because the Highway 40 is a high-speed highway through that area and there are traffic considerations and it is a limited access highway. In other words, not just everybody can put a road onto the highway. We have a corridor management plan, and we did this many years ago. When I say we, the county did this with UDOT many years ago, and we essentially planned out where intersections would be on that section of road, and if they're lighted, if they have a stoplight or whatever. And obviously, if stoplights start to go in, it can change the speed limit for that area. It's currently 55. That could drop it, you know, to a 45 or a 40 even. And the concern that Wasatch County had is that Heber City is proposing to perhaps annex some of that area of the North Village. And so what we wanted to ensure was that if Heber City did annex that area, that they would abide by the same corridor management plan that we had already come up with several years ago with UDOT. And so that was an agreement. Heber City will agree to that. And so it's just kind of bringing another player into the system. It doesn't really change the management plan that's already in place for that section of road, but it will add Heber City into that they will abide by that if or when they annex any of that area to the north.
Okay, and is the county involved at all in terms of advocating for this bypass and helping to move it forward? Where does the county stand on that?
We are very much in support of this. The Wasatch County enacted several years ago a corridor management fee, which is attached to your vehicle registration. And so when anybody comes in to register their vehicles in Wasatch County, they pay an additional fee. I think it's $10. It might be $7. It's $7 or $10. That money is used solely for purchasing right-of-way for future roads. And the one that's at the top of the list for Wasatch County is the what has been called the bypass road. And Wasatch County and Heber City both have purchased tracts of land where this proposed bypass will go. So we have been acquiring land with that money and cooperating all the agencies, UDOT, Heber City, and so forth. Just recently, Heber City has enacted some studies. They've hired some consultants to do studies and to consider what's happening on Main Street and to see what can be done to help mitigate some of the negative impacts of traffic and other issues on Main Street, as well as to what we would do with the potential bypass. And the Wasatch County is involved in that. We've been invited to participate with Heber City. And just last week, there was discussion of a potential of looking at, do we move Highway 40, not just call it a bypass, but do we actually move Highway 40 to the west of the city? And then Main Street, Heber City Main Street, would no longer be the highway. That's certainly a possibility. It will be looked at and studied and so forth, but that is another possibility that could happen. And quite frankly, I liked the idea because that would help to get more of the big truck traffic off of Main Street. If we have a bypass, we can't necessarily force that traffic off of Main Street because Main Street still is the Highway 40. But if Highway 40 is moved, that could happen. We could enforce moving the truck traffic off of Main Street. And so that's something that will be looked at and discussed. The study that's going on, I believe, there'll be a public hearing sometime in August and then again in September. And so you may want to look for that in the future. And certainly that's going to be a very interesting discussion as we get into that.
Yeah, some big changes a lot of people think are pretty positive to move in that direction. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Mike. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
Well, we've got Carolyn Wara. She's the director of Recycle Utah Inn to give us our monthly update. There's some big and exciting news about Styrofoam EPS sponsorship. Why don't you start off with that, Carolyn? Thanks for coming in,
right,
by the way.
Good morning, Carolyn. I do have an exciting announcement. We got a sponsor of our Styrofoam program. Treasure Bound Inn came in just this month as a $10,000 sponsor of our Styrofoam program. If many of you know, we had a pretty rough January and February in our Styrofoam world. Our machine went down. We could not get it fixed. It's one of two machines in Utah, so it's hard to find an expert that knows how to work on the machine. We did find one, and we did get back up and running, and we're very grateful to Treasure Mountain Inn for their support and helping support this program. They said they wanted to solve a problem in the community, in an environmental problem. So they reached out to us and said, how can we help? And that was when our machine was broken. We had a mountain of styrofoam in the back room. You know, it was bags upon bags. It was almost to the ceiling. And they came through and helped us out. So we're grateful for Treasure Mountain Inn. Thank you for supporting us. And we are accepting styrofoam again. Our machine does work. I still get calls every day that, is it back up and running? Is it working? So, yes, you
but
can
it's,
hear styrofoam.
But it's not the peanuts.
Right.
Still
it's the packing styrofoam. Like, it would be around a TV. It's kind of shaped to fit whatever item it's being held. The packing peanuts can be reused in our packing area upstairs inside the office building. And then the food styrofoam, like a styrofoam cup or an egg carton or the tray that your meat would come in, that kind of styrofoam is not recyclable, so you have to throw that kind away.
Okay, and it too takes thousands of years to dismantle.
Right, I think the styrofoam will be the styrofoam that we don't recycle will be on our planet for your kids, grandkids. Mm. They'll find it for you.
Okay,
in the landfill someday.
So this is a substantial. I mean, $26,000 a year for the EPS system packaging.
Right.
To handle it?
Yeah, just yesterday alone, we took in 4 bags of styrofoam. Those are the big, like you'd see in the plastic tent, the big white, huge bags. So alone yesterday, we had 4 of those bags. And then to process each bag takes about 45 minutes to an hour to do each bag. So it just takes us a lot of time to process that styrofoam to get it ready to be recycled on the market. It doesn't make a lot of sense to drive the styrofoam to the recycler unprocessed because it's mostly air. Styrofoam's about 95 to 98% air, so we don't want to haul around air. So it's better to run it through the machine with somebody putting it in the machine and then haul it down once it's been processed. It makes a lot more sense.
And then let's talk about your 100-mile meal that's coming up.
Sure. This is our third annual 100-mile meal fundraiser. It's happening on August 11th. It's at a private ranch out in Oakley. We do have a bus that will take you there and back. It's a 5-course meal cooked by the Park City Epic Promise chefs. They donate their time. And the unique thing about this, it's all ingredients sourced within a 100-mile radius of the recycling center. So right now we're in the process of we reach out to farmers, see what they have, and connect them with the chefs. And chefs make the menu based on what the farmers have and what's growing local. So it's really a good message in terms of lowering your carbon footprint, you know, instead of buying bananas that come from, South America and those are shipped all the way to you here, it's everything on this menu is within 100 miles. So if you are farming, you'd like to donate, we do offer 2 free tickets for every farmer that donates. We have a lot of farmers in already. We have Bill White sponsoring all the meat for the event, which is a big donation. That's usually one of the harder things for us to find. So we're very grateful for that. And then the event is sponsored by Gallery Mar and heavily supported by Epic Promise with the chefs and their attendance at the event. So tables are $1,500 for 8 seats, and individual seats are $200. And if you're thinking of going, we're about 65% sold out already. We expect to sell out. So don't wait any longer and buy your tickets at recycleutah.org.
Okay, and it sounds like you may have a sample menu that you're going to have up on your website.
Yeah,
or
we can put it on the website. Again, it's all based on what we're able to gather. There's some things on there that we haven't acquired yet, and the chefs are like, hey, go find, we need this rub for this thing, or we need this thing for the sauce. And so we can put it up on our website, and if you're thinking about going, take a look at it.
So have you all become kind of sous chefs then over at Recycle Utah, where you're running around finding just the right spice combination and that kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of. We were looking for coffee the other day, and we're like, not even going to drink coffee. The coffee is for an ingredient in a recipe or something like that, or something too that, then you would get creative with what kind of, fat you're going to use. Is it going to be a lard? Is it going to be a butter? Olive oil is not an option because olive oils don't grow here. So you got to be a little more creative. It's a lot. It's kind of a fun game to play. And I'm glad I don't have to try to cook with this. I'm not known for my cooking skills. So I can go around and ask for donations and help find some things. And all the alcohol would be Park City Brewing and Alpine Distilling. So Alpine Distilling is working with farmers of how to make a cocktail with local ingredients. Also, they're like, hey, do you have, lemons or limes? We're like, nope, that's not an option. We got to go another route. So it's a really fun game to try to make a menu. And it usually goes over really well at the event. It's served family style, and everybody's kind of sampling everything, and plates will come out, and it's all really well done. So.
Yeah. Who's overseeing that 100-mile radius? Who's in charge of that?
That's pretty much us, team at Recycle Utah. And we have a lot of, this is the third year of this event, and we have a lot of return farmers that are excited to be involved, and we do offer each farmer 2 tickets to the event, and that's part of the event. We want the farmers to sit along the guests and say, like, hey, that's my arugula I donated to this, and it's really a celebration of local food and local farming. So
fantastic. Sounds great. Okay, dumpster days. Let's get an update on that.
Sure. We are done with dumpster days for the summer. We're doing 2 weekends in the spring and 2 weekends in the fall, so we go quiet until September. So if you missed us for your dumpster days, your best option is to bring out the Summit County Landfill. They're open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5. And they'll take anything that's too large for your curbside bin, or if you did big work on your yard and need to bring it out there, they will also take it. And if you're looking for a little more creative options, you can stop at the center, and we'll help you with some composting options through the leadership class. We also have some local contacts that are happy to haul around that kind of thing if you need, you just need it out and you can't wait till September. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carol.
Thank you
and
so
Laura,
much, Carolyn.
For joining us. And you can go online, I am sure, to purchase your tickets to the 100-mile meal.
Right, recycleutah.org.
Okay. Thanks for joining
us.